On St. Patrick's Day, Wisconsin's Public Service Commission voted unanimously to allow Madison Gas and Electric, We Energies, and Wisconsin Public Service Electric Company to spend $433 million to acquire a 200-megawatt solar power plant that a Chicago-based developer is building in the town of Paris in Kenosha County. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And this plant will also include enough battery capacity to store 110 megawatts of electricity. When completed, it will be the first of its kind in Wisconsin. So what do you want to know about the technology, the likely costs, and potential benefits of this new power plant? Join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Email available to you this morning, ideas@WPR.org. Our guest, Catherine Blunt. She's the renewable energy and utilities reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Catherine, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with this 110-megawatt battery pack. Put that number into some perspective for us, Catherine. How does the size of the park, this pack, compare to other storage facilities across the country?
Yeah, you know, I'm not intimately familiar with this project, but that seems fairly substantial to me. And solar plus storage projects are becoming more common across the United States, and there's a couple of reasons for that. For one, of course, to add storage capacity to a project like this means that it really just increases the utility of the project, because it can, the battery can store solar power that's generated very cheaply when solar production is at, you know, going at full tilt. And then when the sun goes down, it can discharge that power and make it so that, it can provide power for longer by discharging the batteries. And batteries have become significantly more cost effective and cheaper to build in the last several years. So it seems pretty reflective of other similar projects we've seen across the country.
When we've talked about renewable energy in the past, concerns have been raised about reliability. And do the battery packs like these massive battery packs, help address the issues of reliability, Catherine?
They do help address the issues of reliability, yes. At this juncture, that most batteries that you're seeing added to projects like this will discharge power for about 4 hours. This technology is generally you can call it a 4-hour lithium ion solution. And that's helpful, right? I mean, that's helpful because when you consider the fact that a lot of times in many regions across the United States, you see power demand peak in the evening hours as, you know, people are getting home from work, or there's simply more people in the household using electricity. And that of course is when you begin to see solar power production decline. So if you can use batteries to help carry you through that period, that does a lot to help reliability concerns that kind of come with the fact that this production profile changes throughout the day. It's not the only solution that's needed, but it's definitely helpful.
Catherine Blunt from the Wall Street Journal joining us. And back in December, you found that companies were on track to add a record number of these battery installations across the country. Why is such a peak in interest? What is it about these battery packs right now?
Yeah, so there's a number of different factors at play. For one, it's simply that costs to install, to build and install these batteries have fallen precipitously over the past decade or so. And so it's just made it so it's just not as expensive to do so as it was even just a few years ago. And that's a big thing. It's worth keeping in mind too, that renewable generation, both in the form of solar power as we're discussing, as well as wind, are some of the cheapest forms of power generation out there. So a lot of this is, it's driven by the market. But then there's an additional layer, of course, in which in Wisconsin and other states, there are very ambitious goals to significantly reduce carbon reductions that come from the grid by adding more renewable energy generation, perhaps with the intent to, you know, eliminate those emissions in the next, you know, few decades. Yeah, 2050 is a common goal in Wisconsin and elsewhere. So in order to make that happen, batteries are a key piece of the puzzle to ensure reliability, as you mentioned earlier.
Catherine Blunt, renewable energy and utilities reporter for the Wall Street Journal. And what questions do you have about batteries being used in our energy grid? And should the U.S. transition to some more renewable energy sources? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation. And Catherine, what share of our grid is renewable energy now and battery storage compared to our fossil fuel usage?
Yeah, so renewables make up a fairly sizable let me put it this way. Carbon-free electricity generation makes up a pretty substantial portion of our power generation mix at this moment. And when I say that, that includes hydroelectric power, which, a lot of that, of course, was built out decades ago. But, combined with wind and solar power, it's become, I think, at least for a very long time, and I believe this is still the case today, really second only to natural gas in terms of prevalence, and closely followed by nuclear power, and then coal, which has been on the decline for some time. So, but a big reason for that, a big reason why I'll say carbon-free generation has eclipsed nuclear is just due to the very significant additions of wind and solar over the past several years. You don't see any large additions in hydroelectric facilities. So that's the reason why you kind of got pushed over that threshold. But yes, it's natural gas is still the dominant form of power generation, but wind and solar have become very significant in their own right.
This utility-scale solar power plant going up in Kenosha County would be the first of its kind in the state of Wisconsin. But Catherine, give us some perspective nationwide and even around the globe. Where are we seeing this sort of development? Which states are developing battery facilities the fastest?
California is a big leader in this space, and there's of course California has been a leader in adding renewable energy, since the start of the century. And so now they're at a really critical juncture because there have been very rapid additions of wind and solar power over the last couple of decades, and they're also planning to retire the last nuclear power plant in the state, as well as several natural gas fired plants in the next several years. And so on top of that, the state simply needs more power generation in general to meet its very ambitious carbon reduction goals. So it is working, the Public Utility Commission, the counterpart in that state, recently approved a really large procurement order in which all of the utilities and other power providers throughout the state have to contract for a really significant amount of battery storage over just the next couple of years, in part to help offset the effect of those plant closures. And those plants, are sources of electricity that can supply power at all times of day. And so you're challenged in that you need to have power supply, to available during those hours, which is where battery storage comes in. Solar alone, of course, can't supply it, nor can wind.
Let's go to your questions now at 1-800-642-1234, where Bill is standing by and done. Bill, you're on the air with Catherine Blunt from the Wall Street Journal.
Hey, good morning. Hey, what's the life expectancy of these batteries? They're not exactly, the way they're mined and everything to get the lithium out, they're not exactly green,
Well, let's ask Catherine. 110-megawatt battery pack or plant is what's planned for Kenosha County in the town of Paris. How long would we expect that to store our electricity, Catherine?
Yeah, so I mean, these are long-term projects, and can be used over the course of many years. There does reach a point in which, I mean, it certainly varies by project and by size, but of course, listeners, Bill, you raise a great point. There have long been supply chain concerns as it relates to lithium-ion batteries, and there kind of does reach a point in which they reach an end of life cycle, and that needs to be addressed in terms of how you kind of either reuse or recycle or do something else with the components.
Is the lifespan dependent on its usage, like, the batteries that we use?
In some ways, yes, it is. How often is it discharged? How is it? Yeah, how often does it charge and discharge, essentially?
Catherine Blunt joining us, renewable energy and utilities reporter for the Wall Street Journal, taking your calls this morning at 1-800-642-1234. As the first of its kind utility scale solar plant goes up in Kenosha County beginning this spring. Actually, they're leveling the ground as we speak, and as many as 750,000 solar panels expected from the original plan to be powering part of southern Wisconsin. What questions do you have about this utility scale solar plant? 1-800-642-1234. 604-280-6421234. Our conversation with Catherine Blunt continues. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you are listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. As mentioned, the grading and groundwork has begun in the construction of Wisconsin's first utility-scale solar power plant. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and according to the Wisconsin State Journal, the installation of up to 750,000 solar panels is scheduled to begin later this spring. Some consumer advocates say the utility companies failed to prove any benefit to ratepayers and raised some concerns about reliability. What would your concerns be about costs, opportunity costs, and the future of energy in our environment? Taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234, your emails at ideas@wpr.org, with our guest, Catherine Blunt, renewable energy and utilities reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Let's go to Andrew in Dousman this morning with a question. Andrew, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
So my one concern would be going to a significant, or relying on solar and wind for a significant portion of our electricity needs. My concern would be the reliability, because you look at California, as you mentioned, they have a significant amount of renewable energy or carbon-free energy that they rely upon, and they regularly have rolling blackouts. And then I look down to Texas just two winters ago, where they had a smaller portion of electrical energy supplied by wind and solar, and they had people dying because they couldn't get heat into their houses and they weren't prepared with more reliable sources of coal-based or fossil fuel-based. So my concern would be that when the electrical grid goes down because we can't supply people due to wind or solar, it comes at a high cost, and it can cost people their lives. So that would be my main concern.
Andrew, thank you. Catherine, could we see a situation like we saw in Texas a few years ago here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so there's a couple of interesting points that Andrew, you make some excellent points. Both Texas and California have absolutely faced their challenges over the last couple of years. In Texas, So Texas has a very interesting power market design, and I won't get too much into the details of that, but, alongside this market design, there was not a requirement for power producers across the board to winterize their generation facilities. Now, in Texas, it doesn't get cold like it does in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, of course, those that are producing power are prepared to operate in colder temperatures like you saw in Texas. It was just so anomalous, that kind of freeze in Texas. I mean, just the generators were not prepared, and it was failure. It was across the board. Like, you did see at different times in that week a decline in wind and solar power, but there was also an issue with the nuclear plant. There was issues with coal plants. I mean, coal stockpiles just froze. And there was also a very significant issue with natural gas production throughout the state, because natural gas producers also hadn't been required to winterize and therefore couldn't get the fuel supply to the power plants, even those that could function. So I would say that there's not a great risk of that same sort of disaster occurring in Wisconsin, which has been prepared for this kind of weather for an extremely long time.
Let's go to William now, who's on his way to Toma this morning. William, you're on the air with Catherine Blunt from the Wall Street Journal.
Yes, my question is, was there a study done on the carbon footprint, even over a specific amount of time, comparing geothermal electric production versus this solar power plant?
Unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that specifically. It certainly would be interesting to see if this particular development site lent itself to that, lent itself to geothermal. That would come with higher costs. Geothermal is not necessarily, especially at scale, as perhaps on like a per megawatt hour basis, as cost competitive as solar plus storage, I would imagine. But I'm certain that there was a study done that probably analyzed other options.
What would have a lower carbon impact, geothermal or solar? Generally,
a lower carbon impact. I'm not quite sure. Both have the potential to, you know, reduce, both are lower carbon options than other options.
Let's go to Jeff in Delafield next. Jeff, you're on the air with Catherine Blunt from the Wall Street Journal.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. How many acres does this new utility scale solar facility utilize, and how many acres of Wisconsin would have to be devoted to solar in order to produce, you know, to replace our dependence on coal, natural gas? And my concern is that we're using land that could be used for, in other ways, forestry, native grasslands, which also absorb carbon, or possibly smart grazing, or are we using farmland that, as food prices continue to skyrocket, are we using farmland that could be used to alleviate those food costs? Thank you.
The story from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel cites a 1,500-acre footprint for about 750,000 solar panels. And I know, Catherine, you're not don't know the specifics of these, so I'll cite this from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But in general, when we're talking about the footprint of solar plants, what's some of the considerations, especially when we're considering the environment and other potential uses for that property?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I will say, in general, in talking to developers across the country, you know, especially in certain regions, you know, especially in, for example, you know, in the West, where there's, you know, a lot of highly productive sites for renewable energy have already been developed. Certainly there's a bit of a land crunch here, and making sure that the land is used well, used responsibly, and not, you know, encroaching upon encroaching upon other uses. You know, of course, the listener mentions agriculture, of course, is very significant, and these, you know, selling areas for livestock. I will say that, you know, over the last number of years, this technology has become, it's just, you know, more productive per unit. So perhaps you don't need as many panels covering the same amount of square acreage, or, you know, a single turbine is so much larger than it used to be, a wind turbine, so maybe you don't need quite as many. So the land use consideration has become a little bit less of a concern, but it is still certainly a very legitimate concern that's going to need to be carefully managed in pretty much every state.
Continue with your questions now with Prescott, who's calling us from Northern Illinois. Prescott, you're on with Catherine Blunt from the Wall Street Journal.
Hi, Catherine. Thanks for taking my call this morning. I'd like to talk about how this whole green movement has been, I think, more propelled by green guilt and not so much by, facts and science so much. I mean, we have typically a 20-year lifespan out of wind turbines, and then we have to break those down, and those are mostly made of epoxies and bulk wood, and then broken down and thrown back into the landfill. And they're kind of showing that the environmental impact is really not good for wind turbines, and I kind of like to hear your opinion on that, and also maybe hear your opinion about nuclear energy as a better form and a form of energy that can provide us.
Prescott, I appreciate it, and we're running out of time here, but the power of nuclear potential and as well the downside or the ungreen of green energy, Catherine.
Sure. So, nuclear energy is pretty amazing in that it provides carbon-free electricity around the clock. It has historically been, at the size that we've seen, some of the plants we've seen, that's historically been very expensive. There's only one nuclear plant under construction in the United States, in Georgia. It's suffered from significant cost overruns. And in general, you know, there's been public concern broadly about, what to do with nuclear waste. And it's a very safe industry. It's very well managed, but it has been hard to build that kind of generation in the United States. We might begin to build some smaller modular reactors going forward to help solve for some of the reliability issues that listeners have been raising. We may see that. In terms of large scale generation, I don't think we're going to see much more of that going forward. And the cost because these plants, you know, were very significant and costly to build, generally the electricity that they produce is more costly as a result, and it's not an especially competitive form of generation. Now, we were also discussing earlier, I mean, take, for example, the lithium ion battery. I mean, you can, there are similar concerns associated with production of panels and turbines and how they're disposed of. But, you know, the question at hand here is really reducing reducing carbon emissions that could add to, you know, exacerbate climate change over time. And certainly everything has a cost.
Right.
But
and
that's
Catherine,
where we're going with this.
I appreciate it. And we're just out of time. But it was looking at a carbon neutral future. And there's certainly more questions to be had. Catherine Blunt, thank you for answering ours this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. Enjoyed the conversation.
Catherine Blunt's the Renewable and Energy Utilities Reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Up next, news, then we hear from the director of the UW La Crosse School Psychology Program about a state shortage of school psychologists. You're listening to The Morning Show.